Hello, and welcome to recording number 43 of Gary Gygax's Saga of Old City, an annotated reading. Today is July 24th, 2021. So we are at the point where we're getting very near the end of Saga of Old City. And in context, Gord, Curly, and Chert have been looking for a hidden little valley or depression that they've found, and it supposedly holds a relic and a story of a demonic, some kind of catabalone demon or devil that is in there. They've made their way through, and they're now confronting this catabalone, and Gord seems to be able to see it clearly, while Curly and Chert, instead of the creature, they are seeing a naked woman that is pretending to be helpless. But it is Gord who can see through this. Now I'm going to restart on page number 317, and it is the second paragraph from the bottom. All right. Gord tentatively put his free hand on Greenleaf's shoulder, as if to shake the druid awake from a dream. "Have you gone daft?" he asked. But before he could speak further, the demon interrupted him, and both of his fellow adventurers had their attention riveted on the figure in front of them. "Oh, yes," said the thing in the cavern sweetly. "I will tell you where that nasty catabaline is. It hurts me, and I hate its evil. I will gladly show you the way to its lair. A place not too far from here. Unless brave men fear to have a naked and defenseless woman accompany them." With that, the demon took a small step toward the four. Gord growled softly, beat, but he did not seem frightened, and did not move forward to meet the thing. Curly and Chert seemed likewise unafraid, but Gord was horrified by the approach of the catabaline. As he fought to retain control of his reason in the face of his terror, Gord noticed for the first time that the sword in his hand seemed to be pulsing, and in an eye blink, he put everything together in his mind. The demon had somehow placed a glamour upon his companions, a magic that made them think they were facing an unclothed woman of harmless aspect, but the power of Gord's weapon overcame the demeanor of the demon for him, and enabled him to see the creature for what it really was. Break. Now, this is, and Chris has put up a picture from page 319. This is a Clive Caldwell rendering of the demon. So, Gord, at this point, because of this magic sword that he got from Count Dunstan, he is able to, I believe, see in the dark and kind of get a true seeing, which may be one of the enchantments upon the sword. And also, this is about how the demon is able to cause an illusion or a glamour, as Gord puts it, as a specific ability or spell. Now, the demon, you see this in the black and white, this nimbus around it, but on the front cover, you see that it is a blue glow, and that is also mentioned previously from, I believe, yesterday's recording, where they're going toward this area in the lower reaches of the Carn, and they notice a bluish glow coming from one of the corridors. So it not only has cast a glamour over Curly, Greenleaf, and Chert, but also the bear that was summoned up. So, you know, normally the various spells usually differentiate between humans, monsters, or monsters and animals. And here it seems like everybody is charmed. And we're going to see how Gord reacts to all this.
It's surprising that Yerk was charmed, because animals normally rely on like all of their senses instead of just their eyes like humans.
Yes, and it was mentioned yesterday that Yerk, the giant monstrous cave bear, was going through these tunnels that of which it became very confusing, following the scent. And Chirp mentioned how it all smelled foul to him, and he wasn't detecting any pathway, but the bear's senses were much better, and he could follow the scent and stink of this creature. So it is, that is a very powerful ability, and the illusion and over himself. So we know that no matter how monstrous this creature is, it has at least human or greater intelligence. And either the ability to cast this glamour as a natural ability or an acquired spell. All right. Gord always had this ability. And again, right here is this theme of illusion, disguise, and also discernment. So that we've seen it all through the story that either Gord, sees through something like back in Stoink when he was in, what was that, Haldron, the town, the village outside the walls where the mercenaries were. He immediately saw through the mercenary who was recruiting and then played along and created a character to get to the cash box or the war chest that these mercenaries were using for recruitment.
Yeah, that was Haldron, and the mercenary was Flatchet, I think.
Yeah. And so what we see here, again, from the very beginning of the story, Gord does disguise, and Clyde the Sharper sees through it and sells him to Theobald. Theobald is a sadist, and as he's beating Gord, Gord goes along with it because he has that, he can see through to the truth. And, later on when there's the war between the beggars and the Thieves Guild, Gord sees through, and Theobald is fooled, but Gord sees enough that he realizes there's no chance for the beggars to defeat the Thieves Guild. And it goes on and on like that. That is a continuous theme about disguise, illusion, and the ability to see through it. Of course, it's Gord. Gord with the magic sword. And then a little bit here about Gord where he is, he puts it all together. You know, at first he's a little confused. I find that a little odd because he had previously encountered a wolfware with a song that it was singing in the shape of a nude woman. And so this is the second time that has come up. And, I just think that is, it says how Gygax perceives things, I think. And, the most inviting and helpless creature is chosen by these various monsters so that they think they can enchant or fool, the people coming after them. So it's interesting to see that the wolfware and the catabaline are using the same kind of trickery. And both times it is Gord who sees through to what they truly are.
Now, Gord does hear the woman's voice. Right? Yes. He hears a female voice, but he sees the demon.
Yes, so the voice is something the demon actually does. It's not being charmed by the voice. Mm-hmm. It just has the ability to mimic the female voice. Now, the wolfware, I don't think, spoke, but it sang like a siren.
Right.
And Gord heard that, but he was protected from the charm that was being cast by the wolfware by this sword. And that really shows that, my, this is quite a powerful short sword that he was given, and very appropriate weapons. So he's got two powerful weapons. He's got that short sword and the dagger, the poignard, the long tooth that he has, and one that is meant for humans. So he's got, and now he's developed his combat skills to a higher level. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page number 318, paragraph 4. Without dwelling further on the matter, Gord wrapped the druid sharply on the left arm, using the flat of his blade. "Clear your brain, man," he shouted, no longer tentative in the least. "That goddamn demon comes for us." The catabalone had been fixing its gaze on the bear, taking small, cautious steps toward it with the evident intention of finishing the giant ursine before going after the men. But then the earless, egg-shaped head jerked up at the sound of Gord's desperate warning, and the terrible eyes locked on the young thief. An unspeakable fear filled Gord, and the wash of it weakened his muscles and made his knees knock together. He almost dropped his sword, but as his fingers loosened, the hilt somehow stuck fast in his hand. The demon continued to stare at Gord, but in the space of 2 or 3 seconds, the feeling of terror passed, and he felt himself able to move again. Break. All right, so like I was saying, the sword has all these abilities, and it's giving a kind of true sight, and probably a protection from charm. And now Gord is overwashed with either the natural ability or the spell of fear or scare. And, so his sword, now it takes a little bit, a few seconds, for the sword to be able to dispel this fear that is starting to overcome Gord. That is quite the powerful sword.
And I don't think Blamu thought that it was as powerful as it was.
Oh, because we remember it was an acquired weapon. I can't remember, was it a bandit or somebody who had it? A bandit chief? And obviously, I don't think the weapon was really examined.
And he more or less gave him the sword to make peace with Archibald, right? Because Geller is an agent of the King of Nyrond.
And it is even more so a bribe directly to Gord, because I forget his name, the spy master for Blemu, was asking Gord about not mentioning his captivity or anything.
The hush sword.
Yes. And several other things. I mean, there is a necklace, but it's just of detection from Evelé. I don't think it really is supposed to have any other abilities. There was another necklace from Blamu, but I don't know if it was meant to be magical or not. There's the armor. Short sword and armor, and then the old long tooth. So he's got several things right there. And I don't know if he's wearing the cat's eye ring out openly. He seems to always have it like hidden away somewhere. All right. Oh, were you going to say something?
No, well, just that he doesn't normally wear the chrysoberyl ring.
That's right. And, I don't know what powers it's supposed to have. It's obviously the dwarf, back in Lukic, where Gord bought the long tooth for humans that was 6 gold, he recognized that the ring was of, great value and he loved gold. He had a dwarf's gold lust, but he wanted to, he wanted the ring even more. All right. I'm going to restart. It's page number 318, second paragraph from the end. "At the bastard thing, for your lives," he shouted, and with that cry he darted a couple of steps forward, ready to do battle. The effect of Gord's actions freed the others from the illusion they had been beholding, as evidenced by their immediate reactions. Jorg roared with ear-splitting ferocity, stood erect, and shuffled forward on his back legs. The druid swung a hammer free from his left wrist, where it had been thonged, loosed it toward the demon in a single whirling motion, and then held his ground near the chamber entrance. The barbarian stepped up to close quarters with the terrible foe, battle axe held ready to strike. All of the demon's intended victims were now bent on destroying the thing, but the monster was not unprepared for this turn of events. Distracted for a split second by the bear's roar, the catabaline failed to avoid the thrown warhammer, but even as it struck on the body by the whirling weapon, the demon was acting to again put its attackers at a disadvantage. The blue radiance it gave off became a brief, eye-searing blue flash, and then all light was gone, including that from the lodestone on Chert's helmet. The cavern was plunged into total darkness. "Come close, demon dog, and feel Brule!" The cry came from Chert, standing off to Gord's right hand, the thief and the bear. Although he was blinded, a low humming sound indicated that the barbarian was swinging his great battle axe to and fro before him. The demon's response was a hideous, chilling laughter, a sound like a dozen insane children in demented glee. All right, break. So I'm wondering if Curly has a spiritual hammer. And of course, Chert, by saying the name Brule, has activated the magical abilities of his axe. Now, it's interesting that the darkness put out the permanent light spell on the lodestone. And as everything's from perspective, Gord has been able to have like a night vision or a darkness vision. And it hasn't been mentioned, but I wonder if that is still in effect and Gord can actually see the catabaline. And I wonder what, how the bear is seeing things. And because it's a bear and an animal using a lot of scent detection, I don't know how much of a disadvantage the lack of sight is going to be on the bear. All right, and I'm going to restart. It's page 320, first paragraph. Gord found that he could see clearly despite the blackness, although colors were not as they should have been. It took a moment for his brain to learn how to deal with things, and by then it was almost too late. "To your right, Chert," screamed Gord. "The thing is moving between you and Jorg." He saw Chert turn in response to his warning, just as the demon pivoted to face Gord, glaring banefully, and pointed at him with a scaled, claw-fingered hand. Instinctively, Gord took evasive, acrobatic action, not a second too soon. Gray light issued from the catabaline's eyes, first striking the place where he had been, and then following the path of his leap and roll. Before he could rise from his half-prone position, Gord felt the strange radiance touch him. A terrible wave of pain passed through him, then his muscles were convulsed by a vicious cramping, and he couldn't move. Paralyzed, Gord could only watch what transpired next. A break. So Gord can see in the darkness because of his sword, no doubt. And then we have this spell and or an ability coming from the eyes, almost like the beams of a beholder. So the demon is, able to wash something over Gord, maybe a paralyzation spell or beam of paralyzation, quite a handy ability right there for arranged paralyzation when I believe that the spell, whether the spell, at a distance, because usually I thought you had to reach out and touch something to paralyze.
This is a far more difficult enemy than they've encountered so far.
Yes, you know, so much better abilities here that it really is. And we haven't even, you know, it hasn't been damaged. There hasn't been any physical contact yet. Nobody. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. The Warhammer, Curly's Warhammer did strike it, but we don't get indication that it was like grievously wounded, or the nature of the Warhammer attack, whether it is like a floating spiritual hammer or whether it is just a Warhammer that can be thrown. All right. I'm going to restart. It's page 320 and the third paragraph. As the demon was spending its power on Gord, the druid had been at work. Thanks to a spell guided by Greenleaf's elven eyesight, the catabalone was now limed with a pale radiance, and both barbarian and bear could see its form outlined in pale green phosphorescence. Chert was closer and struck immediately. All right, break. So, Curly cast something that I assume is like, what is it, Nistel's magical aurora?
Okay. I was thinking fairy fire, but it's a different color, right?
Yeah, fairy fire. Maybe it's a fairy fire. I'm not sure if Nistel, who I believe is a magic user, I don't believe his spell should be, you know, available to a druid. So probably what we're looking at is fairy fire.
I'm not sure if fairy fire is for a druid, but maybe.
Yeah, and so one of the things, though, is you wonder what magical resistance this creature has. Because here, there's a spell cast that is working, you know, instantly on it. And, you know, it shows you that, you know, sometimes spells that seem pretty useless can actually be very valuable. You know, it depends on how he does his magical system. But maybe a little luck there, or some information from the survivors of the bandits who encountered this demon, you know, about such things, because it's very handy that he has a spell like that to illuminate the demon.
Right. Fairy fire is a first level druid spell.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, he's going to have at 10th level and with bonuses, I think there are wisdom bonuses, then he could have quite a number of, you know, fairy fire first level spells. And here, you know, it's asked that this is Gygax's version of combat with, you know, abyssal lower planes creatures. And here, you know, it is, it's, you know, the difference is this creature is just not like some monstrous, mindless creature. It seems, even though it looks like it, you know, is a good combat hand-to-hand, Gygax even mentions that it seemed to Gord that the demon could have taken on the monstrous cave bear and torn it to pieces. So, you know, instead, though, you know, this monster's first is trickery and spells, and it shows a great deal of intelligence. And here we have the first edition AD&D spell, Fairy Fire. And, you know, with a good range and a good duration, it's 4 rounds per level, so it's going to go 40 combat rounds. It's got the radius, it's fairly quick because it's a 3 combat segment to cast. So the druid would get it off, that spell off very quickly in the combat round.
It can be green too.
All right, cool. All right, I am going to restart. It is page number 320, and it is the fourth paragraph. Brul bites, he bellowed, leaping forward and burying his axe in the demon's scaly thigh. The big barbarian was dwarfed by the towering catabaline, but the blow caused the demon to shriek in pain. As Chert drew back from the blade, the demon sent a stream of ugly blue darts from its fingers. These missiles struck the barbarian, and he reeled back. Break. All right, that definitely sounds like magic missiles. So, you know, this demon, it really has, you know, here we are with several magical abilities or known spells. And when you have these combinations of, brute strength, I don't know what its armor class would be, but when you have a big, dangerous, physically dangerous creature, and then throw on, several different magical abilities like project fear and magic missile.
Illusion.
I'm sorry?
Illusion.
Illusion and paralyzation. Right here, this is a, it makes me think that the demon doesn't, these aren't natural abilities, or some might not be, and that he might actually be, have the abilities of a magic user. All right. I'm going to restart. We're still on page 320. And it is the third paragraph from the end. What the demon intended next was uncertain, for a snarling form struck it in fury, and Catabaline and Cave Bear were locked in a tearing, clawing, biting, roaring melee. The bear's rush actually overbore the demon, and the two combatants rolled and fought, locked together thus. Chert, still staggering from the effects of the strike he had absorbed, followed their path as they thrashed about the chamber, being careful not to be crushed beneath these titanic opponents, but staying ready to strike with his axe again when he could get a clear target. Move! That word came from Greenleaf, who shouted in Gord's ear at the same instant that the thief's muscles came back to life. He had not felt the druid's initial touch, but now the healing magic had worked, and he could fend for himself again. Thank you was all he could get out before the druid dashed off to go to the barbarian's side. Ward stood and moved carefully to gain a position where he could attack without fear of interfering with his friends. Within a few steps, the last vestiges of stiffness left his limbs, and he felt as fit as he had before. Gord could see that Curly Greenleaf was touching Chert, just as he had ministered to Gord moments earlier. At the moment, the bear gave an awful roar, shuddered, and lay still. The scaly demon stood up, pulling free from the embrace of the mortally wounded Yurg. The Catabaline was torn by tooth and claw in several places, and the yellow-green ichor dripped from its wounds. Throwing its head back in triumph, the Catabaline howled a cry of victory. Filled with bloodlust, it ignored the men and reached down to break and crush the bear. Just then, Chert struck again. First swing of his humming axe only grazed the demon's right arm. That was reaching for Yurg's motionless body. But the barbarian recovered quickly, and the weapon's backswing took the demon on its other arm, putting a deep gash in it. The demon bellowed again, but this time its shout was not triumphant. Break. It seems like what we're seeing here is a higher-level fighter who gets more than one attack per round. So I think the description of Chert's quick recovery and backhand swing that again hits the demon is an example of that second attack.
Would it be like weapon specialization or something like that?
Well, no. I mean, I believe that just the natural abilities of a higher level fighter in first edition, as you got higher, like first you got a second attack every other round, you know, three attacks every two rounds. And then you went up and you got two attacks every single round when you got to a high enough level. I don't know how much offhand as I remember if it progressed further than that. I'm really not a DM who's done a lot of high-level fighting, so, you know, at the point where they're getting to, you know, five attacks every two round, you know, things are changing quite a bit. You know, that means that fighter is really, you know, really reached a, you know, a high level. It's mentioned here that that fairy fire spell, you know, Curly's 10th level. And so he can cast 120 linear feet of enemies. So, you know, he can really send out that fairy fire spell, you know, to cover, you know, it lasts a long time, especially if you're a 10th level druid. And it can be up to like 40 opponents can be hit by that fairy fire. And here, Chris has put up the melee attacks per round for the fighters. So that, you know, you start off as a fighter from level 1 to 6, one attack per round. And from 7 to 12, you get the 3 per 2. And then with first level, it is level 13 and up that you get 2 for 1. So no matter what level you reach, you know, you could be a 20th level fighter in first edition and still only be getting 2 for 1. But it's mainly because first edition doesn't really show, you know, the players' characters getting that high a level. And something like 15th, 16th, 17th level, that would mean you're one of the strongest, greatest fighters or you know, or paladin or ranger that ever existed and may, you know, on Earth, because most of the rulers and magicians and you know, individual characters never reach you know, really super high levels.
So we have Chert at least 7th level.
Yes, and I think that is what it's expressing. He's at least 7th level because he's doing the 3 per 2 attack. And as it's described, it really sounds like not 2 per round. You know, it doesn't seem to me that he is striking 2 attacks every round. And of course, this fight also shows, you know, it shows how combat damage is expressed. This is a creature with a lot of hit points. So it can get damaged and get things that would reduce its hit points. And instead of like a fight lasting, if, you know, most fights for lower level characters, they're over maybe even in one round or two or three. And because, it, you know, lower level can't take that much damage. But this demon obviously has enough to survive, you know, the wounds from the Great Bear, the Warhammer attack. And now this would be the third, you know, the third injury from that battle, the two-headed axe that Chert is striking with, and obviously would get a strength damage bonus, you know, probably 2, 3, or even 4 points added on to every attack. So, you know, Chert can inflict a great deal of damage.
Yeah, and if we're right, when he calls Brule's name, it's a critical hit.
Yes, and, you know, you notice, what does he hit? He hits its leg, and he, you know, severely wounds it. He cries out in pain. He hits its arm, and I think he hit its right arm and hit its middle. Now, he's not doing things like severing the demon in two like he did the evil cleric, but it does show that he is not only, you know, he's really striking, and I believe the demon can only be hit by a fairly powerful magic weapon, like +3 or higher.
Makes sense.
Yeah, that maybe is skipping ahead a little. I can't remember where I got that from. All right. I am going to restart, and it is page 321, and paragraph 3 from the end. Third paragraph from the end. "Come on, you blue bugger. Fight me," Chert challenged. The demon accepted, spinning with cat-like speed and swiping its uninjured arm in a clawed blow which tore into the barbarian's chest, unbalancing him and allowing the terrible monster to use its wounded arm to strike and hold Chert. The demon's long claws sank into his flesh, but the barbarian was not finished. He worked his right arm free and struck again. Brule, he managed to cry, as the battle axe again impacted on the demon's severely wounded left arm. This time the blade bit true, and the limb was severed from the monster's body. With a shriek, the catabalone leapt off and away from Chert, grabbed up its lost arm, and held it up against the place from which it had been severed. As Gord watched with a mixture of fascination and horror, the demon's sickening ichor flooded over and into the twitching arm, and a blurring seemed to occur around the wound. The demon was reattaching the lost limb. Gord was moving up to stab the monster while its attention was elsewhere, but before he was close enough to do so, a sheet of roaring flame sprang up between him and the demon. It was said that such creatures revel in fire, but evidently this one didn't. The thing roared in anger when the flames appeared, but continued to concentrate on repairing its arm. At first, the fire seemed hesitant to approach the demon's body, almost as if something prevented it from coming near. The crackling fire danced in a ring encompassing the monster, and all the while it kept working on its arm. The flames went out for a second, and then reappeared, this time in a blazing mass that enveloped the thing, and threatened to consume it. Too late. Now whole again, the creature raised its arms and brought them down, and as they lowered, the flames dimmed and began to die. Scorched and smoking, the demon strode forward away from the last licking tongues of fire. As the last of the flames died, so did the greenish luminescence that had swathed the demon, again making the thing invisible to those without special sight. All right, I'm going to break right there because I'm not sure if the wall of fire is coming from the demon or whether it's something called up by Curly Greenleaf. Here we have the demon has like troll-like regenerative abilities. They're really upping the ante here in the powers of this demon. Now, it is interesting that the fire is something that seems to hurt, the demon. And then, again, here we have Chert summoning up Brule by name. And like you said, it seems every time he calls it, there's a critical. And here he severs its arms. I'm just a little taken aback that there isn't more going on when all this is happening. Gord, as soon as the creature is falling back, hadn't immediately, dashed after it before the fire blocked him. And at first it seemed like that fire was a great benefit to the demon. By keeping Chert and Geller and Gord away from him when he was severely wounded.
Yeah, that's a great axe Chert has. I would guess that Curly cast the fire, but I'm not sure either. Didn't say.
Yeah, and I'd say from what we've learned of the axe, I believe it has to be at least +3, because that's, I think, what you needed to hit the demon. You needed a magical weapon, and that, in old D&D, is a very powerful item. A +3 to hit item. That, now, if he's also +3 to damage, and can summon up, I don't know how many times, can summon up a critical hit, I'd assume Chert's strength is at least a +3 to damage, and a plus to hit, and the magical axe, which has to be at least plus three, then we're talking, you know, maybe seven or more damage just from the magical abilities. Now, it's a two-handed axe, but I'm not sure, unless it's especially big, it might be a 1d6, you know, natural damage item. But if he's critting, you know, it could be, you know, that like that damage combined with, you know, the magical bonuses and the crit may cause like double or, you know, double damage.
That's how we play it. We don't have a crazy crit table or anything like that. But if we do roll a nat 20, we have double damage.
Yeah, I think with this weapon, it seems to have that plus the ability to, you know, like sever limbs or roll on, you know, a roll on the more crazy, you know, kind of critical hit chart.
On some, right, like really basic creatures with, this is a house rule, but really basic creatures with like no magic armor or anything like that, if, we can roll the dice again, and if we get another 20, we can kill it.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, the game really benefits something like that, you know, and especially if you're using a natural 20, it's just a, you know, it's a 5% chance, you know, that, you know, a crit is going to happen, that you'll roll a natural 20, which is a very, you know, it's a very low chance of critting. And I always did that it took that, you know, that special condition, no matter the advantages of the weapon, that the crit only happened on the roll of a natural 20.
Yeah, it puts a little bit, you know, a little bit of fun, additional excitement into the game.
Yeah. All right. All right, where are we? I'm going to restart. It's page 321, and we are getting very close to the end. Brule, he managed to cry, as the battle axe again impacted on the demon's severely wounded left arm. I'm sorry, I lost my place right there. Battle again impacted. This time the blade hit true, and the limb was, I don't know, am I on the wrong page? The limb was severed.
You may be.
From the monster's body. No, no. Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, I am. I'm sorry, I must have got, Gord was the first hesitant to approach. I'm sorry, I should have been on page 322. All right, page 322, and the fourth paragraph from the end. Okay. Not hampered by the lack of light, Greenleaf advanced toward the monster, stopping less than a spear's length away and adopting a defiant stance. Chirk was off to one side, back on his feet, but obviously still trying to recover from the onslaught he had suffered, and now once more left in the dark. Thanks to his sword, of course, Gord could still see. As demon and druid confronted each other, Gord circled stealthily around on the side opposite Chirk until he was behind the creature's field of vision. He continued to creep as the monster spoke. Little druid, your useless spells are nothing to me. I would have used my powers to destroy all of you long before this, but I enjoy breaking such miserable creatures as you with my bare hands. The demon was speaking softly with malign persuasiveness, but Greenleaf stood immobile in front of it, in front of the thing, spear held in both hands before him, refusing to flinch or show fear. Humans beg so wonderfully and shriek and cry when I slowly pull and break them. What fun, what joy! The catabline continued to purr evilly. One blue clawed hand reached out slowly in Greenleaf's direction. Perhaps I will make you into a replacement for my last servant, the one you thoughtlessly destroyed above, when I finally go free from this prison too. Shitmouth, Greenleaf shouted as he stabbed his spear into the demon's slowly reaching hand. "You think I am taken with your foul enchantments of voice. Take that." And so saying, the druid struck again, this time tearing the other grabbing hand with the keen spearhead. By this time, Gord had reached his destination behind the monster. Recoiling from the two painful spear attacks, the catabalone back full into Gord's own assault. Its lower back was unprotected and unprepared. Both short sword and long dagger went home, driven into their hilts by the young thief's muscles and the demon's own motion. For a second, the monster continued backward, convulsed with the shock of the assault. Then it jerked forward. The dagger was yanked from the grip of Gord's left hand by the sudden move, but the sword held fast in his other hand, and a geyser of stinking ichor shot out as the enchanted blade tore free of the wound. Howling and yelling the foulest curses, the monster turned to lunge at the new tormentor. "Now, chirt at him," said the druid in wrathful voice, as he cast a second spell to renew the glowing on and around the demon. First thing Chert saw was the demon turned away from him with one clawed hand pointing upward, and Gord suspended in midair several feet away from the claws and some 30 feet above the cavern floor. Without stopping to think about what he beheld, the wounded barbarian pounced forward and sunk his great axe into the monster's thigh once again. Curly Greenleaf followed with a spear thrust into the demon's other leg. A split second later, the two blows hurt the creature seriously and broke its spell. Gord plummeted to the stone below. He managed to come down on his feet, tumbled to absorb most of the force of the impact, and rolled away, and came up shaken, but not seriously harmed. I'm sorry, I stumbled there myself, because I read through this, and I was trying to reread it very quickly, because a Gord is suspended in the air.
Me too. It's a little confusing.
Because he's just backstabbed the creature. He's lost his grip on his long tooth, but he still holds the short sword. And then Curly, calls...
Describing what Chert saw, I think, right?
Right. And then all of a sudden, Gord is up in the air, and I don't... You know, there's no explanation of how he got there.
I think the demon cast the spell on him. Because it says when... Chert saw the demon turned away from him and had a hand pointing up in the air, and then the demon's clawed hand was pointing upward, and he must have levitated Gord or something.
Yes, and but that was a little bit of surprise to me there.
Yeah,
a little confusing.
It totally threw me. And they slipped in Curly casting another fairy fire too, I think. So a lot happened.
Oh yeah, and I mean there is. It's it's a multiple person melee, and there's lots of, and with magic and such, there's lots of things happening. But I think Gygax should have mentioned what was happening to Gord, because it goes from backstab to Curly to
Gord up in the air.
To Chert there, and like we say, this is not from the point of view of some omniscient being. What we see is what is happening, and what the thought process is of what's happening by the individual characters. So we are told things from Gord's point of view, from Chert's point of view, from the monster's point of view, and it does make things a little jumbled.
And the whole thing starts out with that shit mouth.
very much. Now that's Curly shouting that out.
That's out of character, right? I mean, or at least I would think it would be.
I think it should have been Gordon. It would remind you right back to when he was trying to scare away the rat at the beginning of the story.
Right.
All right. I'm going to restart. One thing, though, they do manage to throw in Gord's acrobatic ability. Because at the very end, once he's dropped, Gord is able to absorb the impact of the of that by rolling away and using what he's, his acrobat ability that he's learned from the Atloy and by practice.
It does seem that he lost his dagger, too, in the month back.
Yeah, I would
not
be very
short sword.
I'd be very shocked if there isn't a comment about finding it if he uses it again. There should be. I hope everything isn't just, tossed away in the excitement of the writing here. Because it's a very interesting fight. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page number 323 and the last paragraph. The demon was now terribly hurt. It was not ready to break off and seek escape. Confined in this underground place for centuries, the monster was no longer sane, if any such thing can ever be said to have sanity. Its desire was to inflict pain and death now. This malign wish had pervaded the demon's existence, never with such irrationality as now, when it was itself suffering the pain it loved direct upon its victims. Forgetting about its magical powers, despising flight, ignoring the knowledge that it was able to pass the door which formerly held it imprisoned, the Catabaline sought only to kill the humans challenging it, and to do so most hideously. Even as its body toppled forward, crippled legs no longer able to support it, the demon grabbed for the barbarian and took Chert down beside it. With a swipe of its claws, the other arm lashed out for Curly Greenleaf and scooped his body in close where the demon could maul the druid with its fangs. The sight of his friends being bloody drove Gord into a rage. He ran forward without reservation and began raining a furious series of cuts and stabs down upon the scaly back of the prone demon. Some of the blows glanced off the thick plates of horn that covered the Catabaline, and others were not serious wounds, but mere scrapes and pricks to the mountain of malign substance receiving the blows. Nonetheless, over a period of time that could not have been nearly as long as it seemed, Gord's small sword wrought a terrible tattoo upon the demon's hide. Bluish flesh parted in places, and filthy ichor spewed forth under the razor-sharp edge and needle point of the young adventurer's dripping blade. "Die, you filthy bastard thing! Die! Die!" Gord shouted over and over as he struck and hacked the demon. Then, after what seemed like an eternity, Gord heard another voice between his cries of outrage. "Who can stop, friend? It is finished." Gord, stopping his thrashing, and looked to the side toward the sound of Chert's voice. The barbarian was kneeling, hands on his thighs, breathing heavily. Gord pulled back slowly and faced forward again, staring at the mess before his eyes. The Catabaline's whole upper torso was a welter of wounds, and the demon was unmoving, save for occasional convulsive twitchings of its dying nervous system. Gore spattered and stinking, Gord stood alive over the body of the monstrous demon. Alive. He looked back at his companion. "We have won, Chert," Gord said, almost not believing his own words. "We have slain the bastard. We're alive." "You and I are, Gord," said Chert. "Curly is dead, and his great bear slain too. What a price we have paid for this victory." Break. This is end of chapter 30. I'm breaking here, page 325. We get Chris is posted a article on the Catabalone demon here, I'm not sure.
That's from Dragon 295.
Okay, it's from Dragon 295, and it gives statistics, I believe, for third edition version.
Yeah, it's not first edition, but there's some information that is interesting. I don't know how pertinent the stats are, though.
I wonder if it explains this huge amount of abilities.
Yeah, it talks about a lot of the abilities.
Yeah, because, you know, it's magician and it's illusion and, you know, it's like levitating, paralyzing, you know, casting magic missiles. This is a, you know, a very dangerous demon right here.
It does say that the Catabalines are arch enemies of Tenari and are not immune to fire.
Okay, yeah, and it isn't immune to fire, and the Tenari are the devils. Mm-hmm. So, because it's definitely a demon here, you know, again, it's a third edition thing when they drop the demon and devil for Tenari and
This was written by Sean Reynolds.
Oh, okay. I usually don't like Sean Reynolds' work, so it'll be interesting to see what he's saying right there.
Somewhat interesting. I don't know about the stats, though.
Yeah. Now, we are about to start Chapter 31, but we're at 656. And now this book goes to 352, and the last couple things are an afterword. So we covered quite a bit of ground today. And there are only about 20 or so pages left of the story. And, let's see, the story goes up to page 348 is the end of the story, and then page 349 starts the afterword. And so we've got, we're on page 326. So we're looking at only 22 more pages. Now, normally that, I think, is much more than we can really cover in one recording. But I don't know that with the description of the fight, we did move forward very quickly. I don't think we really skipped over too much because what was that?
Oh, I said no. I was agreeing with you. I mean, there was nothing that I noticed that I didn't bring up. Now, of course, we might have missed things, but I think we did a pretty good job with it.
Yeah, because I look at, you know, lore, and I look at the game mechanics and how to do the role-playing and description, and then finally I look at the story. So if we look at the story, we learn a little bit about the characteristics of how how the demon is, you know, how it thinks a little bit. And then we get a few more reactions from, you know, Curly and Chert and Gord, but really not too much. You know, a little bit showing their character in the fight. You know, how Gord, when he thinks that his friends are, you know, slain or badly injured, that he, you know, goes wild and, it, you know, just goes whacking away at this demon. And then what we have are the mechanics of the fight and the abilities of the demon. And I think that's, you know, probably more information right there on the, you know, on the stats of the monster than we get of anything else. And so, you know, the lore is kind of abandoned. It's, you know, it's not the forefront thing. So what I'm thinking is we have about 22 pages left. And then the afterword, which is going to be very interesting. And I think there's a possibility that the next recording may do it. You know, it may be enough. I think that if it's two parts, then I'm not sure whether we're going to have a very long final recording. Because, you know, we refer back to things, but honestly, we really pick through the bones of this book. And, you know, looking back, I haven't really seen much that we've skipped. So I'm thinking that here, from like what we've just done, I don't think there's too much we can pull, except later on having the time to perhaps compare the 3E demon with the obviously first edition version. You know, because it'll be a little reading of that article right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it may be easier to read in the actual magazine if you have it or have the PDF or something like that. But I just posted it here so that anybody who was interested could see.
Now, one thing that I found interesting was, you know, Curly had a variety of weapons. That spear, when he, you know, like, it seems like that spear kind of disappears and reappears when he needs it. Like when he threw the war hammer and, mm-hmm. you know, we know he used the spear to fight the zombie. And
at one point it said it was a keen spear. Does that mean something?
I think it might imply magical. Because it said, I believe it says that the creature's immune to normal weapons. So at the end there, I think, you know, that spear is going to be magical. And the war hammer seems to just have been a throwing weapon rather than a spiritual hammer. Because we only hear about that being thrown and then nothing else about it. So, you know, we do have, and then it seems like that wall of fire definitely came from Curly. You know, of course, it turns out because Gord is delayed that he gets to backstab. So all the rules for that double backstab apply, the dagger and the short sword, perfect for it. So, you know, that Gord struck, it's some terrible blows. And in the end, he struck the fatal blows against this demon. But, what I like is that it really spread it all out. Even the bear, had a significant role at the beginning of this fight and obviously caused pretty bad damage. So everybody, Curly, Chert, Jurg, the bear, and Gord, they all got their licks in at this creature. All right, it is 7 o'clock, and I am going to call up the Craig bot to say goodbye for tonight. We covered, I don't know, I believe we read through 14 pages right there.
Wow.
So, you know, there are 22 left of the story, and then another 4 pages. I'm not sure. That seems like quite a bit for us to get through in a night. Maybe there'll be enough for 2 more recordings to be filled out. All right.
Depending upon Gord's level, he would have gotten like damage bonuses, right? Either triple or quadruple damage for the backstab.
Yeah, it would be, you know, with the magic weapons and the double attack, that would have been a very, very serious attack. And first edition creatures, they were not like overloaded with hit points. So, you know, I'm guessing that, you know, while this creature had a lot of hit points, it wasn't bulked up like third edition really did with a lot of creatures. All right. I'm going to, and this went very quickly for me. I was very interested in this fight. That's all we talked about. That's all we covered was, you know, the end of that illusion that it cast to the end of the fight, and the end of that chapter. That was, you know, I think a wonderful example of AD&D combat, and trying to show not just a story version, but a real, how you can take the game mechanics and present them in an interesting, exciting role-playing way. All right. It's past 7, and I'm going to say night.
Good night.